Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I am your host, Bryce Castillo, as always. Always the main host, joined, as always, by Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man, as always, just you and me and maybe one additional person.
Yeah, well, how about Justin Robert Young? Let's see if Justin Robert Young's available.
Oh, my God, I've been summoned from my ghost realm where I live most of my days in the ghost realm.
Most of your days? That's but not at like 4 days a week, 5 days a week?
He lives the ghost of his days.
Well, I mean, during the summer months, it's just cooler to live in the ghost realms.
I mean, plus there's those tax incentives that say that you have to remain a ghost like for 6 months and one day. Otherwise, you pay living person taxes. And
My ghost visa requires that I have to come back to the ghost realm every 6 months.
Yeah.
Check back in.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. So there have been some sightings.
Sightings?
Some sightings, and I wonder if you guys can help me solve these sightings, because there's some things afoot.
Wait, are they weird things?
There's some weird things afoot.
Well, that's why the three of us came together 20 years ago.
That's right.
And we said we're going to form a detective agency where we find out things that are weird.
What the things that are weird are. So, first off, we've got a video here from Canada. We've got a shape here in the middle of the screen. This is a moose.
Okay, I thought I was very excited.
I don't want a body shame here, but that looks like a fat moose. Like, I'm not used to.
Rotund.
He looks like the leader of the bull moose party.
He's been eating good.
Not gonna lie, he's a little more bull than moose.
It looks more like a big old. I guess maybe. Is it weird to say that I think of a moose as a fit animal?
I do.
Sure.
I think of them as lanky and eternally optimistic, up until they get hit by an 18-wheeler.
Yeah. But this one is fat.
I wonder if it's because we can't see his legs. So he's on the side of the road here.
It's definitely a thick moose.
Thick moose. All right. So what do you guys see?
Hold on. Somebody's sneaking up. Wait. What's happening here? Slender Man is sneaking up behind a moose. That's definitely a dude in a... Wait, pause.
Sure.
That is definitely a dude in a Donnie Darko costume. Go back and look at it and just picture that a fast action Frank with the bunny ears and everything.
But also, it's kind of just a blurry, artifacty blob.
It almost looks like a very tiny AT-AT. Is that what they are? The walker things?
AT-ST.
Whatever.
Are the two-legged ones.
Yes.
But yeah.
It looks like a little one of that.
I mean, but it's like bobbing back and forth, getting ready to like lurch on this thing.
So it kind of looks. Does it look like it's on four legs?
No, it looks.
It looks like it's on hind legs.
Yeah,
or on two.
It looks like it's on two eggs. Like he's juggling eggs.
Supposedly, the video that accompanied this called it a 6-foot eerie faceless creature.
I mean, accurate as represented. Certainly, if you're an audio listener, I mean.
What do you guys think this could be? Like,
I'm more concerned about the description of that being a moose, because that's definitely just a fat ass cow.
It's a moose.
Can we watch it again? Just looking at the moose, the alleged moose. This is hashtag moosegate. I think this is the real issue.
I think that very rarely can you accurately say with bass in your voice, that's a fat cow. Normally that'll get you in trouble. That'll get you an old HR violation. But here, I think it's accurate.
Right? That's definitely a cow. That's not even a moose.
It's a moose.
There's no way that's a moose.
We can't make out the antlers very well.
Okay,
the contrast.
Look, Bryce, I'm not going to say that you're part of the lamestream media trying to sell a very specific narrative, but I do think that you're not focusing on the real question. Is it a moose?
I think it's a moose. certainly that's the part of the story I would say is reproach.
Yeah, no, it's one of the rabbit creatures from the Dark Crystal that's definitely caught on tape in the background. But is it about to jump on a moose or a fat old cow? And
Imagine Slender Man's disappointment when he finally sinks his teeth into what he thinks is the rich, delicious blend of moose blood. And he gets nothing but bovine syrup.
Well, and imagine him.
Are their bloods so different?
Well, he's just like, you know, I had this whole thing lined up for this afternoon, and it involved moose. And look, it's fine. It's fine that you taste a cow,
Bryce,
but
right. When you go to a restaurant, do you order a soft drink?
Sure. Yes, I do.
And what kind of soft drink do you order?
I tend to prefer a Pepsi, but they usually have Coke.
Oh, so you're saying, what's the big deal? What's the big deal? It's Coke.
So when they show up with the one and not the other, you're totally cool with it?
But look at this. Look at this. These are moose also.
That is way more fit.
That is a family photo of Joe Camel and his three children still trying to make life work after being demonized nearly 20 years ago. R.I.P.
They have that
Camel.
Very distinct long snout, which you definitely see in the footage here. They just don't have antlers.
All right, so yes and. Don't look up pictures of fat old cows.
Yeah, okay. yeah, that's right. Equal time.
Sure, okay.
Eat the debate.
Now, these cows are too fat. These cows are, some of these
I
are.
Mean, that one on the left. That guy on the left right there, that
look
dude
at
right there.
Sir Blaxy. What's Sir Blaxy down there? Scroll down.
To Sir Blaxy?
Sire Black Isle Grant.
All right, now go back to the other, this alleged moose.
Man,
very similar.
That's a very strong similarity. I think you're right. I think they're trying to obfuscate the real issue.
All right, well, one day we will figure out what either of these objects are.
The guy in the mask. Who cares? Cobra Commander got loose in the woods and he wanted to get a good look at a cow.
Sure. As long as we're talking about
guy in a mask. So is that what we think? Is that it's just a person sneaking around in a creepy thing?
Okay. If you were to describe an eerie 6-foot figure, a faceless figure,
bipedal,
really all you need is a mask to make that that's a human.
This is one of the things that I always tell people is there people, as soon as they find out that I'm a magician, they'll say, how did blankety blank do so and so? And I always ask them, imagine that you knew for a fact that cameras would be here in 3 hours and you had to replicate that effect. How would you do it? And then they usually give a very simple, very direct in the heat of the moment, like, sure. Oh, golly, I'm sure there's a better
hologram
method than
and
this.
Printers
but,
and magnets.
No. They're thinking in terms of what can I do right now? And almost universally, they describe like, well, the way I would do it is, and then they describe the exact correct method of how it's done. Mm-hmm. But then the next sentence out of their mouth is, that would be dumb. That'd be dumb.
Yeah.
And then that can't be the real method. So I think I'm with you, Justin. This feels like a dude ran around in a creepy outfit and somebody caught it on tape, possibly his best buddy, so they could release it on Creepypasta.
Is this really – we've reviewed a lot of crazy crap on this show in the episodes that we've done. I don't even really see – I kept expecting the crazy white Guillermo del Toro creature to jump on and eat the moose or something, but he just sort of – lurks around.
I mean, that's
they describe it as stalking this moose.
That's almost exactly what you would expect a human teenager to do while shooting a hilarious viral video in which he wanted to appear as a supernatural creature but not actually endanger himself by getting too close to what I might remind you is an F-wording moose. Moose is a big old creature that can run you over and cause bad stuff.
Yeah, the moose is incredibly unfazed by this large creature that is clearly behind it. Like, it's an animal. Moose are...
You know what it looks like to
prey
me now?
Or
it looks to me like it's Charlie from Always Sunny, and instead of Green Man, he's Gray Man. It's just a dude covered in a gray leotard.
Yeah. There you go.
Also... Never mind.
No, okay. Well, as long as we're talking about animals that aren't quite what they appear to be, gentlemen, can you Can you describe
what if that's like an animal transformer, but it goes from a moose to a cow?
Okay. Asking the real questions here.
well, what about this? Because I think this is a very similar vein. Like, if you look at this animal.
Oh, okay. My God.
First of all, that is a live shot from Tijuana, Mexico.
Oh, Jesus.
That's definitely a horse painted with stripes.
No. Brian, see what you might think that to the untrained eye. But that's actually a zebra because it's on four legs.
Yes.
And it has stripes on it.
It's got stripes on it. Okay, but as we all know, zebras are hunted. Wait, is one of these a real zebra? The one on the left looks
they're
like
both real
horse.
Zebras, Brian.
Brian,
no,
they're both
not.
Zebras. See, again, what they got kind of that zebra head, but most notably, and this is what you're going to learn, they have stripes.
They have the stripes on them is the thing.
I just want to know what crimes they committed that put them in this terrible place where they're wearing the striped uniforms.
I mean, look at this one.
Where is this from?
So this most recent image of a zebra is from
Tijuana.
From Egypt.
Oh,
from Egypt.
So
turns out there's con men in Egypt as well.
Bring that last photo back. Yeah. See, Brian, this is something that you're going to learn more as we go through this study of zebras, is that when it gets very hot, the zebra's natural color
they
will
molt.
Start to fade as if it's ink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It looks like ink. It looks like an inky sort of substance.
Yeah, it'll sure. look almost like smeared paint that's been left on an animal in the sun. Mm-hmm. But that's a natural part of the zebra's a splendid coat.
But you can tell it's a zebra because it has these stripes on it.
But it has the stripes. See, that's the thing, Brian, is what you want to do is just keep an eye on the stripes and say, if it stripes, YN. If yes, zebra.
So this image is from Cairo's International Garden Municipal Park, where two zebras are very obviously painted donkeys. They both were clearly because there's an ink stain on its freaking face, but also
and by the way, knowing that this is a news story only makes me more pleased with the mildly like I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed look of a early college graduate who thought he was going to Cairo to see a zebra because you know it's literally in Africa.
Yeah. These other images that I was showing you earlier, these are from Gaza. These are taken in 2009. At the time, they said that they could not get real zombies because of...
Zombies!
Jesus.
It's true. It could not.
They couldn't get zombies then either.
That technology does not exist yet.
They couldn't get zebras in because of an Israeli blockade. But... You got people want zebras.
Let's not get political, Bryce.
I'm not getting political.
All right, hold on. Let me pitch something to you guys.
All right, okay. What do you got?
So we all understand that our Western ideals for what we can do with animals has kind of changed culturally.
It's certainly evolving to the tune of Ringling Brothers, Bonham and Bailey's yeah. Greatest Show on Earth is no more. And pretty much you could say because no elephants.
Yeah. So they got rid of the elephants. They still had certain animals, but it wasn't enough to bring people in. They had replaced it with more acrobatics. That wasn't what the kids wanted to see. Ringling Brothers went out of business. SeaWorld is moving toward having no more
business
live animal attractions. Mm-hmm. So where on the scale? Let's understand that now the elephant show is out, right? You don't want to be whipping elephants and stuff like that. And we are still cool with like animal preserves, like Animal Kingdom, I don't think is going anywhere within the next several decades. It seems like we're okay with a large enough space and the animals being well taken care of in their own natural habitat. Mm-hmm. Where on that scale? Let's put Animal Kingdom at the most palatable and the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus as not palatable for our culture. Where is an artistic expression of painting animals to look like other animals. Let's say they steered into this and they're like, look at a donkey that looks like a zebra. Look at this fish that looks like a caterpillar.
I mean, look at this lion.
If you want to...
That's a dog.
No, it's a lion.
It's definitely
It barks just like a lion, Brian.
Yeah.
That's actually the direction I was going to go, is if you type in crazy dog haircuts in a Google image search.
Definitely going to do that.
The question is, how comfortable are we with everything we're seeing? And I got to be honest.
Oh, my God, this poodle is shaped like a camel. Oh, I do love that.
It's a poodle made into a camel. There was the, show me the lions one.
Oh, he's like a Madagascar.
Madagascar character. So this one is like all painted up and everything.
I mean, I got Yoda.
So you're asking how comfortable we are with it? Because I think the answer is incredibly comfortable.
Is it better? I mean, I think we can all assume that it is more culturally palatable than like the elephants at the circus, right?
Yes, because this is a very like aesthetical thing. Like
how much? Could you open a park where it's like, look, all these animals are humanely treated. They have plenty of space. Mm-hmm. They are given the best possible life that anybody in their species could possibly ask for.
I got to be honest, man.
The price is we cut up their hair to make them look silly and we paint them different colors.
Well, I think as long as the animal is not endangered by having, you know, parts of their flesh exposed, or, you know, by having very
let's make it a very specific example.
Okay.
Congratulations. I've just announced that the 7 acres that we just bought is going to become
a zoo?
Dog zoo.
We bought a zoo, part
where
two
we
for
have
dogs.
Every single animal on the planet represented by dogs.
Okay.
Right? And they're very well attended to.
I love this idea.
By the way, they said that Infinity War was the most ambitious crossover event in history. Me? We bought a zoo for dogs. Zoo and hotel for dogs.
I mean, look at this cubism poodle. You wouldn't pay like $5 to go see a bunch
of
these.
To go see a pixelized poodle. Yeah, right. And let's say like every day at the end of the day, much like the Animal Kingdom folks, you know, lovingly care for all the animals. You lovingly care for all the dogs, but also you make sure to trim off those edges, get those pixel blocks as square as you can make them.
And it is art and fashion meets dogs.
Yeah.
I think this might
This is
be.
A great idea.
This is a great idea, right?
I'm going to type in dog zoo into Google.
I wish I still was related to somebody by marriage who worked at a certain nonprofit that crusades for animals, because I'd be curious to know whether or not
they would give their blessing to this kind of institution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think if it's just... If you're taking it specifically, if let's say they're like strays or something like that, that you know, these are animals, there is an overpopulation of dogs. So mm-hmm. if you're giving home to a bunch of dogs, but I mean, imagine, really, you're just an eccentric owner.
Right.
But you're charging people to see your work because you're putting a lot of effort into their care.
Right. And all of that money goes to I swear to God, those are dogs.
Look at the little
Holy
panda.
Wow, panda dogs.
Aren't these great though?
Are you kidding me? I mean, there's something beautiful here.
Should we all ask PETA on Twitter? Asking for a friend. Is this cool? If we made a zoo.
Oh my God.
PETA asking for a friend.
So I feel like ethically
but make sure that in that tweet that you let them know that we're going to cut their hair all crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like what, well, unfortunately, I don't know, the voodoo tales I hear about PETA is that they're fairly hardline on some stuff, including the concept of ownership. But
well, yeah, domestication and
yeah. But meanwhile,
really, what's the difference? We did for the Discovery Channel and Toyota RAV4 Hybrid, a little thing in Austin where it was the Cathedral of Junk. It was literally this dude's backyard, and he made a gigantic monument out of old trash and toys and stuff like that. Like, really, aside from the fact that it involves dogs, how different would it be if you out in Austin literally just made like art out of these dogs? Like stuff.
You would need a lot of dogs, I think, is the thing.
The spectrum, here's the spectrum, right? Because since this is a thought experiment, in one version, imagine you had 7 acres and you had 100 dogs. Okay. That alone, each dog was fed and cared for, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think all of us are okay with the story so far, right? Mm-hmm. Next story. Imagine you labeled it, you put up a sign that said the Dog Conservancy, breeding awareness of dogs, and then and then
like a pound, like a shelter.
Well, but there's a tip bucket, you know, and the message is we want to get the word out, like if you're not aware, there are dogs and so on, right?
Okay, yeah. Still, yes.
So then eventually you put the word colorful, the Colorful Dog Conservancy. And maybe it's not so much a bucket to throw money into, but a suggested donation, of $5 to support awareness of dogs.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
And then how far is that from just, you know, that's an old sign, get rid of it. What if we say the dog zoo and it's a required $10 ticket price? And they're the same dogs, just all playing characters now.
I feel like also you need to have a little bit of like, you need to have a personality out in front of this, right? Like, it's got to be somebody who, I'm going to say the words unassailably crazy, but like, I don't mean it like they're insane, but just eccentric, right? Local eccentric. And that you just can't tell them different when they're like, oh, this is Pepe. His favorite movie is Star Wars. He loves Star Wars so much. I put on Star Wars, whenever Yoda's on, all he does is get so excited. He runs around. And I just know that he is so excited that we now have his new haircut. And it's the Yoda dog.
Meanwhile, it's like in his favorite color. Oh, look, I'm holding it up. He's already dancing around in circles. He can't wait to wear it. Let's just put that on him. Let me twist this knob. There's a lightsaber hanging off his neck. Like, oh, doesn't he just love it? Look at how happy he is.
So I'm
P.T. Barkham.
P.T. Barkham's very good. Thank you, WJ says. So I think, you know, as far as the thought experiment goes, I think we've... I think we've maybe assumed and glossed over the things that people have issues with as far as zoos go, right? And in terms of treatment and training animals and training them to put on shows, I think that's maybe where we're diverging a little bit.
Okay, but all right.
I think in a perfect world with the perfect zoo, the idea is good.
Number one, here at Dog Zoo, we don't have them put on any shows. Okay. We literally
they live in their natural habitats, just themed appropriately. They're all the same temperatures. They all get the same dog food. It's just that maybe we decorated this one like, you know, the African savanna, and this other one like, you know, Goat Mountain in Nepal. And the Redwoods. Like,
an Ewok dog. Oh, my God. Like, when we get into mythical creatures, and there's, like three dogs, when they get together, they look like the Loch Ness Monster or something like that. We're going to do so. Oh, my God. There are Ewok dogs.
Oh, yeah.
There's already Ewok dogs.
Ewok dog costumes are very popular.
Just imagine, right? It's like maybe not even a zoo. All right. Hey, you want to know what? We have this zoo thing. Zoo's a bad name. You want to know what it is, passe. Here's the deal. At Crazy Brian's dog emporium.
Emporium. Where we implore.
These are my employees. We dogs.
Implore all the dogs. We're like, would you please just be dogs that happen to be dressed like things other than dogs?
Here's what happens. It's four times a day in a big old, like, in the round stadium, right? Brian comes out, local eccentric, Brian Brushwood, comes out with an iPod, not an iPhone, with a very long a cord plugged into it. And he says, "Welcome to my dog show." And then he just plays a song, and one of the dogs runs out, and he just feeds the dog, and it looks crazy, and then it runs back, and then he plays another song, and it's yub nub, da da da, yub nub, and it's all the Ewok dogs, and everybody cheers.
Oh my god, I feel like this is such a great idea.
This is a great idea.
This is the best idea.
And then I tell stories, or maybe we have one hero dog that represents the everyman.
Captain Ameridog.
Like, and it's just like, you ever feel like the world's against you? Like when those corporate raiders tried to take down the world of Pandora, am I right? And then music from...
Local eccentric Brian Brushwood reenacts the Campbellian hero's journey by way of epically manicured dogs. amazing costumes.
My gosh. Well,
Kylo Ren dog.
Culture pastiche.
Oh. Well, and then like certain dogs that in the second act of a trilogy surprisingly play dead. We're like, oh, nobody saw that coming. Am I right?
Ay, caramba.
Come on, Kylo.
We're going to need a lot of support if we want to open the dog zoo. so please.
Brian Brushwood's dog emporium.
A dog emporium. Not an emporium.
It's a dog
emporium. It's not an empire. It's an implorium.
It's local eccentric Brian Brushwood's dog implorium.
Gotta employ them all. support us.
And by the way,
great idea.
They're paid in love, and they all just got a raise.
So imagine also like we eventually get into like Pokemon themed dogs.
Oh, sure.
And then just to enhance the realism, we actually let the dogs fight each other.
No,
much to way.
No. Where's my alarm sound? I had an alarm sound on this computer.
Not this, PETA. That didn't happen.
cut the feed.
Save that for the after show. That's how the real.
All right. Well, please support this idea and many others over at patreon.com/weirdthings. Justin, tell them all about it.
Oh, man. All right. So here's this great thing. It's called money. give it to us by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. Support this show and all the things that go into it. There's no other science. Oh, these other science podcasts probably talking about quarks or hydrogen or some nonsense like that. No one else brings you the real work. Whether or not it's ethically okay to open a dog zoo like the Weird Things podcast does. So go there and support us. You're going to get your own custom RSS feed that not only gets you the episode as early as it could possibly be uploaded, but also gets you the After Things podcast, which when Andrew's here, we get to talk about all sorts of really cool projects that we are working on and the real behind-the-scenes strategies and therapy that go along with being an entrepreneur.
Real point. One of the things that, because we're listener supported, we get to do is ask the hard questions. And, you know what? I've never done this before on any podcast ever, but I'm gonna look you guys in the eye.
Okay.
I don't know for a fact that memory foam brings you the best night's sleep ever. No. And I'm beginning to suspect that maybe there's a moneyed interest for all these other podcasts.
Well, it's important because you sleep a third of your life.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, can you trust them? Where's their money coming from?
Sure.
Also, you want to know what? I like to just go to the grocery store.
What?
And get my food that I want to cook.
Wait.
Instead of having a stranger put a bunch of food in a box and get it sent to me every month. It's like, listen, man, I don't know whether or not we're in the same boat. Also, why does everything have to have shallots?
Well, and sometimes, you know, I don't like to shave. I don't like to shave every month.
You just grow a freaking beard, just facial hair sprouting out everywhere?
Well, I get lasers, but I don't need a thing.
Oh, you don't mind just going to the store and just buying a normal razor like a normal human being?
Yeah.
Man. how many podcasts will say those three things in a row?
Man, none that I can think of.
No, they evaporate. In fact, challenge your favorite podcast to take the Weird Things challenge.
Oh, we're Are fading away.
Denounce foam mattresses, deliveries, and shave products by mail, and watch them slowly turn into ash like Spider-Man.
I don't feel so good, Mr. Harry's. So, do you guys remember a few months ago on a show called Saturday Night Live, Childish Gambino?
Oh my God.
Performed on there.
Yeah, no, I remember. I called Justin.
Please, let me get
in. I said, "Did you see Childish Gambino performing on Saturday Night Live?"
And you know, that was him performing "This Is America," which was a very big song that week. And there was a portion in the live video. We've got it here. That I remember we talked about it not long after because it's a very interesting effect. Can you describe
what we're looking at? It looks like the cone of lasers put over him with a hazed background, and it looks like a bunch of laser stuff.
But like, how would you did you ever look into the explanation of like how something like this works?
I just assumed it was a beam splitter, but it now that you're bringing this up.
Yeah, I actually did not see this, but I mean, just to give everybody an idea, like this is a fantastic practical effect. If it is indeed it looks like something that would be put in like After Effects.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very anime kind of vibe. Like there's
it looks like these like forms, these ribbons are sort of
enveloping him.
And rotating around him. So I had tweeted a link to this video, which is has a very similar effect of materializing forms kind of in 3D space.
Wait a minute, are these my favorite people, Baby Metal?
No.
Oh,
this is.
Can we pretend they are?
No,
you can do whatever you'd like.
I mean, they look kind of like Baby Metal.
Well,
significantly problematic. Moving on.
Okay, all right.
But there are these like planar forms in space around them, and then you see these large sort of walls of light kind of pushing in and out. Effects that you couldn't really do. You couldn't really do these effects conventionally.
Right. They end up leaving you with the impression of like the holograms in Avatar or what have you.
Yeah, like you might think, oh well, maybe there's a holographic display in front of them, like the Tupac stuff. There's also this effect of like strands and beams of light sort of in midair. There's this great effect here of the lasers almost look or these lights looking like
this
rain.
This is amazing.
So this is an effect. The SNL effect was created by, let me make sure I get the name here, by a man named Joe Picard and Adam LeBay. Second one is I believe from a company called Rhizomatics, and this is actually a practical effect. Both of these are practical effects. What is happening is that the lasers and the camera are tuned to specific speeds.
Oh, doggone it. This is a strobe effect.
Yeah,
this
very
is
high shutter speed.
So it does not look like this to anybody at home, but
or to people in front of it, right?
Or sorry, to anybody there physically there,
right?
That's fascinating. That's brilliant.
And you know, kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, Brian, about magic and how you would do something.
So
and,
yeah, wait, hold on, and just sorry because I'm going to be the well actually guy.
Sure.
So it won't. It isn't a practical effect. It is an in camera effect, but it's not an after effect.
It is not post processed. If that's the best way to put it.
It's not post processed, but somebody in front of you would not see that.
Yes. No. You're right.
They would have a different experience.
Yes.
Charitably, magicians call this a dual reality effect, where somebody on stage experiences one reality, and then everybody in the audience is, you know, has their brains melted.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. But you know, I saw this over the weekend, and it made me kind of go into a rabbit hole because this video of these three
women, because
you were
ashamed,
is
that you'd laid your eyes upon the face of God, and you were saying only a rabbit hole will hide me.
Sure.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I kind of fell into a rabbit hole because this is a part of like a series of these performances by this group. And it focuses on the use of like technology and dance and visuals. So there's like another example here where the three of them are dancing and there's like a silhouette on a behind them. And this is a series called Perfume X Technology. This is the name of the band is Perfume. And they're an interesting group because it's these three women who do sing, but they never sing live. And so they make up for it by doing interesting visuals like this and by doing very, you know, masterful level dancing. And this is all a part of a NHK series in the lead up to Tokyo 2020 to explore different technologies in video ahead of, you know, the big Olympic showcase in a few years. And
so basically tech demos leading up to a showcase.
Yeah, basically. And they've done a lot of really interesting things, you know, over the years between like projection mapping on the women dancing because they're going to know what the silhouettes of them look like. There's some footage here of them using drones in a live performance.
Oh, man, they should be careful.
Yes. Even things like this, like could you describe what the stage is?
Oh, this is great. It looks like at a casual glance, you're seeing what looks like three people standing in front of a small light to cast shadows on a giant background behind them. Mm-hmm. But then as the shadows get larger and smaller, it becomes quickly apparent that that's not what's happening. And as a result, it feels novel and magical.
Yeah, it's virtual shadows mixed with actual real shadows. You can see them here on the screen. But the other interesting technology here, which is really more subdued, is that the panels behind them, how would you describe the panels that are...
They look like giant 4x8s that are moving around, but as you ask the question, it makes me think that that's not actually what's happening.
Well, they are, but you would think a conventional method would have them be video screens. You can get large video panels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But these are actually just blank panels. This is a thing that they've called dynamic projection. So in normal projection mapping, you would map out a 3D model and aim the projection very, very precisely, and it would be fine because it doesn't move. But this is a system to track these large planes and adjust the projection so that the planes can move.
That's brilliant.
But they're not video. They're just actually projections.
Live video.
Yeah, yeah. Is this live or are they just choreographed too?
Oh, no. Like it's apparently super live if I'm hearing Bryce correctly.
So
like,
it depends. It's a mixture of things. So, you know, talking about the shadows that Brian mentioned, that is all computerized and pre-generated. You know, they before this live performance where they're dancing, they went and did 3D a 3D capture of them so that they had the silhouette data to create virtual shadows. And so is the dynamic projection pretty much knows where the panels are going to be. But then later on in this performance, if you look at the background, it's maybe a little hard to make out. This is a drone, outfitted with a camera. Can you tell what's going on in
the
background?
Sorry, you mean the perspective is from a drone?
From a drone in this hall, yes.
Got it. Okay, so a drone in a hall. We're seeing the camera kind of, you know, fade left and right, and it looks like we got three girls dancing. Mm-hmm. And in time with it, you also have what look like several,
polygons
suspended from a fly system. You know, a bunch of squares. Old white people suspended up in the world.
Yeah.
And then, you know, other squares flying around in the background.
Sure. But this is another sort of understated thing. The image back here where these little cubes are sort of materializing and dematerializing, you can kind of see a background, like if this was a room, like the far wall.
Oh, shoot.
Here.
Are you saying that the whole perception of depth that I'm seeing is not real? That all of this is being real-time rendered specifically for the... This is straight-up magic because... what's happening is dozens and dozens of people and a lot of money and energy is being spent to fool exactly one. Normally it's pair of eyes, but in this case, a single eye.
Yeah, the camera.
Like to fool exactly one eye. That's fantastic.
Yeah. To get more descriptive, the background is flat panel. You know, this is just a recording hall, but it has an illusion of depth because
parallax is what that's called. That mm-hmm. sensation when you're driving and you see one mountain move in front of the other mountain, and that gives you the sense of depth.
Sure.
All of the parallax that you're seeing is simulated, and that's what makes it feel like it's a practical practical real set.
It is because it's a drone and it knows exactly where it's going, it's able to map it, that projection, exactly to where it needs to be.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Let me see if I had another one. Oh, yes. Okay, this is one last one. This is the same group. They did this. This was not with NHK, but this is with a telecommunications company. Can you sort of describe how this is beginning?
It looks as though we're seeing three different girls on three different sets snapping from camera to camera to camera. But there's some part of me, given everything you've told us up until now, that makes me suspect that's not what it is.
So and so they're kind of getting into a buildup now. Like, what? How would you describe this?
Oh my goodness! So I guess So there are three girls in what look like
a pyramidal sort of stage.
Yeah, like an enclosure, and I guess they have a red, green, and blue filter that they can turn off. At, like, is this practical? Is this what we're saying? Like, if we're assuming. In the chess match of what I'm looking at right now, I guess I'm going to say I my best guess is that, man, I got nothing. This is magic.
What do you think about this? Or what do you think is happening here?
I have no idea. I mean, like, because to me,
it looks post-processed to hell.
Yeah. But if it's not, then I don't even know whether they're all in the same cube at the same time. And it's just shot in a way that makes it look like they're all separate. I guess that would be my guess, is that they are all in the same cube, but it's angled in a way where it looks like they're all separate because the mirror's behind
them.
Wait a minute.
They're all in the same place. And there are times they look like they're facing the same direction, but they're never facing the same direction.
Oh.
They're in different corners and there are three different cameras. And this is live switching from camera to camera to camera while also there's live projections.
So you're saying the three of them are in the same space.
In the same cube.
In different corners, all three facing different directions, while synchronized robotic cameras spin around in a beautiful symphony, and also projection mapping
to the space.
Yeah.
Okay, so what if I told you that this was live?
I believe that, and what you're describing is consistent with what we've said so far.
But they are not only not in the same place, they are in three different parts of the world. One of them is in New York, one of them is in London, one of them is in Japan.
Oh, that's just delightful.
And so
all of this is just live half-switching. Everything is in camera. Like, you've got the feeds, and you're... Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, so this is a partnership with Docomo as a part of, like, oh, hey, you know, our live streaming, our live video latency is so good, we can do something like this where you have a choreographed dance and you have a very choreographed video processing, but they can be so in sync that in three different parts of the world, these three girls can do this dance so together, and it looks so sharp that, you know, that's the power of Docomo.
I wouldn't be shocked if they made sure that that was all put together by the time that they released it.
This was streamed live. They did an interview after this. It was streamed live, and they had a big three-way interview and conversation.
I mean, I believe all of those things, and also what Justin said. I believe you can stream live and have conversations, and then also make sure that everything goes exactly right.
Sure. No one's taking any chances.
Sure. The other interesting thing here that you see is some camera movement. That's that's like a tweening thing. There's no cameras moving at all, but because the cameras and the post-processing know the dimensions of the stage and
so similar to the man 20 years ago, the Matrix effect, you know, was obviously not one camera spinning around, but a sequence of them. And as you said, it tweens, you know, it does the morph from one bit to another. So we're seeing a version of that.
Basically, but it's not even a series of cameras. It's two cameras, and they know the positions between them, and it knows what the environment looks like, and it knows about what the woman should look like as they're dancing.
And so it's just able to just write the story in between.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fantastic.
I'll tell you what, Brian, you have made the point with magic that, you know, obviously magic has its roots in physical, you're seeing it in front of your face.
Sure.
Methods, but that digital methods are, while frowned upon now, if you are trying to make them out to be a physical thing, are something that the culture will dictate, will become more and more of a thing as we get all more technologically literate. And now the question is, okay, well, how do you combine these factors to fool me? I feel like this is the first time that I have seen something where I'm like, no, if there were a like magician who just did these, like, look, nothing's practical. I mean, everything is either in camera or, you know, let's say, no, this is my rule. Nothing is after affected.
Right. No post-processing. Camera,
yeah. But it might not be what you would see live, but nothing is done in After Effects. I feel like that would be amazing.
We've already seen that in the last 10 years with two great splinterings off from the general tree of magic. So think of whatever you think of when you think of magic. There have been two fractions or factions that have splintered off, both of which I think have vastly added to the art. One is the Marco Tempest, which is exactly what you're describing. The fact that, like, okay, I don't know the rules of magic or perspective or videography, but I know for a fact that this is how it looks live, and he's doing this live for a camera. So maybe he's taking advantage of perspective and framing or whatever. But regardless, and again, this is part of the thing, as you know, Justin, I'm big on, is it is the job of the magician to play chess very, very well. And that means you need to define the chessboard, you need to define the rules, and yet within that rules, without fudging, without just telling a lie, because if all that matters was telling a lie, then you could just swoop into any small town and announce, by the way, I'm the new Jesus, and then, say, the sun came up today, you're welcome, you know. So, but instead, you define the rules, and even despite those constraints, manage to surprise and delight and leave people wondering how that was possible. The other faction, the other splinter group that I could think of in the last 10 years is cardistry, a form of juggling where it's never even open for discussion how much digital processing or how much it takes advantage of the camera or whatever, because it is presented as though what you're seeing is physical manipulation
in real time
of utter precision that would look exactly the same if you were there in person. Mm-hmm. Man, I'm in favor of all of it. Put me down in favor of more wonder.
I think it's like, this is the first time, like, if somebody said, okay, no, we're taking this level stuff. Like, I'm going to try to get a television special based on this, like, technological stuff, and then maybe after the TV special, we'll do a teardown and I'll reveal the magic of the technology that I put together. But it is the art of synthesizing this kind of tech.
Yeah.
I'd be so down for it. Like, I think it'd be great, because this stuff is great. Like, it is amazing.
Yeah. Well, and I bring this up because these technologies only become more commoditized, right? The one with the dynamic projection with the moving panels, part of their breakthrough with that is not that they did it, but it's that they had to build a software to prototype and get even faster and faster, because that's a very high demand, you know, venue, things like this, where you have mixed reality, where you can adjust the city in real time, on this helipad.
Sure.
That stuff's only going to get more and more accessible. Like, look at deepfakes. Deepfakes, we went from, you know, one guy saying, I could do this, to here's a program. Everyone's giving me giggle. But it went to a very user-friendly program very quickly.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're going to have links to all these videos in the show notes.
I suppose what I'm saying, I guess if I have a take on this, it's like, congratulations. It's taken for a bit for all of you to get here, but welcome to being a magician. Your job is to, in a constantly shifting landscape, constantly try to figure out, what is it that my audience knows and believes is possible? What is it that they would never consider? And then how to exploit that in order to create that sense of, I did not know that was possible up until this moment. And it really is. And this is something that I get into it with other magicians about is that there are people who believe like, no, keep it static. Magic is an art that has reached its zenith in 1967 with this one Doug Henning special. And let's just, if nobody knows the rules, then they'll always be amazed from here on out. Whereas I feel like magic is a defining point that is constantly shifting, and that the art itself is actually fueled by the education of people. Like, the farther that line moves, the more sophisticated of an audience that you have who's aware of all the different techniques or whatever, then that means the more expensive, challenging, and also amazing in its result of magic you're able to create.
Yeah.
100%. And I don't know. I mean, without this getting into a more pedantic kind of magic debate, I think that there's a reason why the coolest, most high-profile things that magicians will point at and say, like, oh, look, that's magic. That's a magic effect. These are old principles. They're coupled with very ambitious people, and they're done for a million different reasons, from theme parks to, you know, Tupac at Coachella. You know, every magician looked at that Tupac hologram and was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's a thing that we all know how to do, but that's a cool application of it. And it's like, yeah, wonder why it took Coachella doing it and not, you know, a magician. Really cool act, yeah. Knowing all the things that they know.
Yeah, man, this is very cool. I'm excited to see where this sort of mixed reality stuff goes in the future.
Here's how I feel is for a specific period of time, it was possible to, number one, have an archetypal role that was universally well respected. You know, let's say used to be the shaman, it became the stage magician as this often. Pretty much universally masculine form that Doctor Strange, basically, like knowledge of the arts beyond that which is available to mortal man, and he would show up in your town and do these things. Very quickly, that archetype has been written and rewritten, usually in decade-long blocks with Doug Henning, David Copperfield, David Blaine, Chris Angel, or whatever. But I think we're at the place now that the art of magic is healthier than it's ever been before, but perhaps the archetype of the magician in all the various male and largely white versions we've seen it in the last 50 years maybe is ready to evolve so that, again, straight up magic can happen. It just exists as a team-based effort going forward.
Yeah, I mean, look. And in many ways, it always has been a team-based effort. Like, you know, the myth of the one magician who knows everything is, you know, fairly quickly dispelled when you look at the talent surrounding the most popular magicians on the planet.
Correct.
Great. Well, I'm glad you guys are excited about that stuff. If you're only listening to the audio and you want to check out the video, we've got the links in the show notes to all the videos that we just watched. Or you can check it out, the video version of the show on YouTube. You guys want to do picks?
Yeah, super fast, super fast. My new favorite thing is Cupcake and Dino, Cupcake and Dino. General Services, that's what we do, we do. It's a fine show. If you like the aesthetic, if you like the vibe of Regular Show and the aesthetic of The Amazing World of Gumball, and you like independent creators who are success stories, I ended up chatting with the showrunner, the creator of Cupcake and Dino. He's out of Brazil. Pedro Iboli? I don't even know how to say his name.
Yeah.
He's great. The show's great. There's heart.
And did you talk to him?
Basically, I loudly shouted, I just discovered Cupcake and Dino, and he on Twitter responded, I'm so glad. Me and my team worked very hard on it. And then we, the rest of the conversation was in direct messages, and he was just one of those instant like oh, hot damn, both of us are here without guile and able to directly and unironically appreciate each other's artwork. It was a love fest.
I feel bad for literally everybody listening because you don't realize that the greatest talk show on the internet is Brian slides into those DMs. It is such a magical moment whenever Brian slides into the DMs of somebody that he likes or there is mutual admiration. It is always such a fun time. So Cupcake and Dino, where can people find it?
Netflix. It's a Netflix original, and it's great. It's
family-friendly, child's... Which would you prefer? Like, which would you call it? A child show or family-friendly?
The whole way I got into it was I was trying to shut up my five-year-old daughter.
Sure.
And I was like, hey, here's a new Netflix original thing. And she's like, I don't want to watch that. I was like, I don't know. Looks kind of cool to me. Well, here, I'll watch the first 2 minutes with you, five-year-old. And then 6 hours later, like... this is the greatest show I've ever seen. This is the best thing ever. It's so smart and funny, and the pacing is incredible.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great.
But a kid's show or family-friendly show? Like, I think there's a distinction. Like, is this for the kids, or is this like an adult Adventure Time
You tell
general?
Me. Is Adventure Time and regular show...
I think those are family-friendly.
Okay, great. Then this is a family-friendly show.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You got a pick, Justin?
Yeah, Gen Con. I came back from Gen Con. Gen Con's an event in Indianapolis every year. It's the largest tabletop convention. I've been there 2 out of the last 3 years. It is always a fun time. Thank you to everybody who came out and said hello when we were selling our games at the Escape Room Indianapolis. We left a bunch of games there, so we would very much encourage you to go to Escape Room Indianapolis and go try to escape. And then when you're out, just be like, hey, I won. But I also listened to Justin Robert Young, and he said that there were games for winners. And see if they give you one. I don't know if they will, but you can ask. Because
Very cool. That's Indianapolis, USA.
Yeah. EscapeRoomIndy.com. They're a fantastic escape rooms. All the Gen Con super nerds. Doesn't matter how woolly those neck beards were, man. They were challenged and excited by those escape rooms. So if you dig them, it is Gen Con tested and approved.
Very cool. I have a pick. This had a new season come out over this past week, and I keep falling back into it. It's Orange is the New Black. Mm. I know you fell off a few years ago, right, Brian?
Yeah.
What about you, Justin?
Once I realized that there was that plot thread where they were dangling Piper getting out and Alex actually getting out, and then very quickly they figured out a way
Alex
to get him back.
All of a sudden
it was just like, oh, yeah, no, you can't really have the show if anybody progresses beyond the second act, so I guess we're just going to be here forever.
I guess it's just Cheers in jail.
Yeah. Cheers in jail.
Cheers in jail is a great show.
I think that was how they pitched it.
So I will say that this new season addresses that a little bit. But it's a very comfortable, easy show to kind of get into it. It doesn't feel as prestige as maybe it used to, as the show has gotten kind of more comfortable in prison and telling the prison stories and kind of hitting a lot of the same characters over and over again. But, it was the sort of thing where I kind of just gave it a shot this season 6 and ended up just plowing right through. So I think it's not Game of Thrones. You know, you're not going to need to pay attention and keep notes and stuff.
For the record.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure somebody could roll back the tape. And if the right words were bleeped out, we would be unable to tell whether you were talking about the latest season of Orange is the New Black or getting a flu shot. Like, I'm glad that it was over with quickly and you're happy you did it. probably good in general.
I was worried about whether or not I would want to do it.
but it wasn't that much, and it was just like... and it was over.
All very true. I read
a review of this season. So they changed the setting. So that's probably the biggest like shakeup is now they are no longer at the facility that has been the main setting for all the previous seasons. They are at a new facility, which introduces new characters and hopefully new wrinkles.
Yeah, they go from the minimum security prison to the maximum security prison right down the street because there was a huge riot
bet that's great. I bet they feel a lot more secure.
Turns out no.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so they're kind of dealing with sort of the legal stuff of you know, trying to get confessions out of the people who started the riot and organized the riot and somebody died and what to do with that. And it's fine, but it's still wacky, and I think if the wacky stuff turned you off, there's still enough wacky bits. You'll
still be turned off.
Yeah. Well, also a really interesting pair of villains sort of in this season who are trying to play off each other and wage a war against each other. I think it's really interesting, and they end up wrapping that storyline up in an interesting way. So Orange is the New Black. It's a Netflix show. Maybe check it out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Well, guys, thank you so much again for coming to the Weird Things podcast. Brian, Justin.
Bryce.
Bryce. Yeah.
It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.